Hi, I'm Daniel Lees, and welcome to Geography 101. Geography 101 is all about the places that I visited from Europe, Caribbean, North America, South America, Asia, and a lot more. And today, I have a special guest. He is a 10 years of experience in travel writing, fiction writing, content creation, creative strategy, marketing, and of course, project management. No other than Mr. Douglas Weissman.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about the places you've been to and maybe some places we've shared.
Yes. So, Mr. Douglas, before we're going to do that, can you please introduce yourself more?
Yeah, absolutely. You'd mentioned I'm a travel writer, I'm a novelist. Those are the two places I put most of my emphasis, along with being, say, I don't know, a dad to a four-year-old. That's pretty, takes up a lot of time. That's time consuming, but a lot of fun. And it also feeds into that desire to A, tell more stories in new ways, and B, share the world that I've come to experience with her and more.
Share to the world, people. So, Mr. Doug, can you tell us, what is a travel writing job?
Well, my current travel writing job, it has come in many different iterations. Currently, I work for Zicasso.com. It is like a travel aggregate, and I have helped them and the content to both inform and inspire people who want to travel the world. The company works with over 100 countries. I think it's 111 currently. And it's about getting the trip that you want personalized to your interests and goals. So my goal with that company was always about trying to demonstrate the possibilities, both in maybe a sample itinerary to Argentina, or to let you know the top things to do in New Zealand. And a lot of it, the content that I wrote was based on my experience, having traveled to a lot of the places originally, and then having talked to experts who work in organizing tours in those places and working with hotels, restaurants, sampling things, exploring things. It's all about discovery and making connections.
Yes, making connection, people. So, Mr. Doug, what's your favorite travel destination and why?
That is a question I will never answer. But it's only because it's impossible to choose. The way that I generally gauge that is what places or place surprised me the most, because surprise is my favorite experience, where either I wasn't expecting something or didn't know what to expect, and all of a sudden I had an outrageous, wonderful, unforgettable experience, possibly because I didn't know any better. So one of the places that always tops that list is Cambodia. And I went only with the intention of seeing Angkor Wat, but ended up spending so much more time in a treehouse in the northeast of the country. I saw elephants. I went and met people in villages. I just had this overwhelming, beautiful, and again, surprising experience based upon, one, my lack of knowledge of what I was going to do there, but yeah, also just the unexpected beauty that I came to witness and engage with. And that is what that's what I want out of a travel experience.
Yes. So besides from Angkor Wat, what is the most adventurous activity you've been undertaken while traveling?
Ooh, well, that depends on what you would define as adventurous. I hitchhiked in Jordan, not on purpose, but sometimes that just happens. I ended up tagging along with this group of 20 somethings in Thailand to a bar far away from where I was staying, and I had no idea what was going on, where we were going. It was this really fun bar, though, that was in a tent with these really long tables. They had put up, this was in 2010, so flat screen TVs weren't everywhere like they are now, but there were flat screen TVs playing music, and it was bar cart service. They brought all of the ingredients to make drinks to you at the table and mixed whatever you wanted. It was just this really fun, new, exciting moment, but it was adventurous because I didn't speak the language. I didn't know where I was. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, all these things that could have ended up very badly worked out to my advantage. So that was another adventure. I went bungee jumping in New Zealand, and it was one of the first stops I ever took on my solo around the world trip. And I sent the video. I sent the video to my mom. This is how brazen I am, and my poor mom. But I sent her the video without any context. And she just opens up and says, "Oh, look, Don," who's my dad, "I got an email from Doug." And she opens it up, and it's just a video of me falling right off a bridge. And she just screams bloody murder. And so those would probably be the three biggest adventures off the top of my head.
So, Mr. Doug, what changed your perspective on life?
When I was 20, it was 2006, and I moved to Italy to study abroad for a year. And a lot of people do 3 months. I know people that did just 6-week summer programs. I was in it for a year. And that experience turned my world upside down. I didn't know I was missing. I was not a big traveler before that. My family had traveled around the United States. I've been to Hawaii. I went to, say, Canada when I was about 6 months old, so I wouldn't remember that. I had, as a college student, been to Mexico because I live in California. It was easy for me to go into Tijuana or something as a stupid college student, being a stupid college student. But a real travel experience, understanding immersive culture, getting connected with something different than what I'm familiar with, that came in 2006. And not only did it give me the travel bug deep and bad, it also demonstrated that I am so in need of making personal connections based on unique stories. And so not only was I visiting all these places, but I'm learning about the culture, I'm learning about the history, I'm learning about the personal history from the people that I meet along the way. I'm learning about all of the reasons why so many other people moved to, studied abroad in, transferred to, lived in, whatever it was, all these places. And it just blew my mind. And I have been on that same journey ever since, not just the travel kick, but also trying to make those connections, learn about people, understand why they make the decisions they make, and share those stories along the way.
Yes, and thank you for sharing your experience to the world. So, Mr. Doug, what are your top 3 must-have items when you are traveling?
This is a great question, and I am definitely the worst person ever to ask, because the 2 things that I always have with me, but it's not necessarily something people wouldn't bring, but it's the only 2 things I remember: a backpack, like a small day pack that can carry a water bottle or a book or a journal or any of those things. Just a small day pack and a charger is not the word. All of a sudden I can't think of it, but a converter, right? To make sure that I can charge my camera or charge my phone or computer or whatever it is. But those are the only 2 things I feel like are really necessary. And generally you can find anything else you might need otherwise. Personally, if I was going to say a 3rd thing, I would just say comfortable walking shoes, whether it's hiking boots or some sort of sneaker or whatever. But that's really up to you and where you're going and what you're doing.
Definitely, surely. So what is the longest trip you've ever been, and where did you go?
I did a year around the world. This was right when I graduated from college, and the timing worked out well. I had already set in mind that I was going to do it, but then I graduated from college in 2009, which was peak world recession, right? That great recession. So there wasn't a job waiting for me at the end of that rainbow. And luckily, I had already had my route planned out. I was just going east, and I was going to go for as long as I could. Generally, I had the year planned out. In the end, it was about 10 or 11 months, because I went, here's the macro routing. I went Fiji, New Zealand, Australia, Indonesia, Southeast Asia, so Thailand, Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, Then India, Jordan, Israel, Egypt. I was supposed to go to Greece, but I missed my flight. So I missed Greece, wound up in Italy again. Then I was supposed to go to Portugal, but the volcano in Iceland at this time was erupting. So all flights were grounded and nobody could get out of Italy. Nobody could get out of Europe, basically. And at the same time, my wallet was stolen. So my ATM card, my credit cards, I didn't really have much cash in there, but all of that was gone. So every morning I had to wake up. I had my parents wire me some cash, and every morning I had to wake up, check my email to see if I could get a flight out of Italy. No. Okay. I go to the reception at the hostel I was staying at and say, can I have another night, please? That happened for about 5 or 6 nights before I finally got a flight out. And because my wallet was stolen, and I didn't have a card or anything, I had to cut my trip short. So I was supposed to go to Portugal, but I couldn't make it. I was supposed to go to New York, but I couldn't make it. So I headed back to Los Angeles. So it was about 10, 11 months was the longest. But after that, I did 6 months in South America and Mexico. And then I did 5 months in Africa. Over the next 3 or 4 years after that.
Wow. Interesting journey, Mr. Dog. So what is the most unusual food you tried while traveling?
Well, unusual to me, but it was pretty traditional for the area. So I've had fried caterpillar, which was just muddy. I've had alligator or crocodile, which just ended up being a little tough. I've had kangaroo, which again was a bit tough, but I loved having cricket, nice, crunchy and protein. I've had spicy ants. Those were all, I enjoyed those things. What's interesting is I actually had this conversation with my daughter last week. And again, she's 4 years old. So she was very surprised and a little scared that I told her I'd eaten crickets and ants. And then she ran away and screamed to my wife, Mom, Daddy's eating bugs. No, I'm not eating bugs now. I've eaten bugs in the past.
Yes, what an experience, Mr. Dog. But before we go on, I want to shout out my top 10 countries listening to Geography 101. Of course, number one, United States, Canada, United Kingdom, Australia, India, Germany, Ecuador, France, Ireland, and of course, Italy. Muchas gracias, or grazie mille. That's Spanish. Grazie mille, Italy, for listening for Geography 101. So, Mr. Dog, have you ever visited places that felt like home?
Yeah, I have. And the most amazing thing is that the longer I'm away from them, the more I miss them and the more I realize how homey they felt. And I've lived in Italy twice. I lived in Florence for that year that I was studying abroad. And then my wife and I moved to Rome right after we got married. We got married and a month later we moved to Rome and she was doing a master's program there. And it was just a place that we felt, even amid the culture shock and cultural differences, it was a place that I felt incredibly comfortable and loved. And my parents always said that I never liked driving, which is difficult when you live in Los Angeles, which is known for the driving that you need to do to get from anywhere, even though it's always a parking lot. So you have to drive and then you're stuck in traffic. But being in Rome, being in Florence and being able to walk everywhere and living, even when I moved back to Los Angeles and finding neighborhoods where I could just walk everywhere. And it took a while for my wife to realize that I don't like leaving my neighborhood. So if I had to get in a car and drive, even if it's 15 minutes, I still hated it because it was like, oh, well, now I have to leave my neighborhood. I don't want to do that when I could just, I want to find everything right where I am. And then Costa Rica is another one where there's just something about being in Costa Rica that I just felt cozy to me. It's the colonial architecture, the cobblestone streets, obviously the friendly people. I mean, they're known for being so friendly. And then there's something about the way the clouds roll over the mountains and there's leaving this gentle mist that whenever I see that, for some reason, makes me feel very at home.
Well, very interesting, Mr. Doug. So how do you immerse yourself in the local culture when you travel?
I try to engage in conversation with whomever, wherever, and that's, to me, the best way to learn the true culture, because it's not just about the big events. It's not just about what they do on Easter. It's also about what they do every day and where are their important focus. Where is their important focus each day? Such as, you can say that a culture is family oriented, but what does that mean? Well, you learn by talking to somebody that, oh, every day they are having a conversation, they're having tea or coffee with their grandma at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's like, oh, well, that demonstrates the hierarchy of cultural importance or familial importance there, right? At least for that person. And then you kind of hear these stories over and over, or at least in a similar parallel. And then like, okay, so that demonstrates how and why family is important in this aspect. And then also the food. I think food is an easy gateway into any culture, I think, because it demonstrates history, it demonstrates tradition, it demonstrates connection. And so me, I'm Jewish, born and raised Jewish in a large family, very family oriented. And but we also know that food is a demonstration of love in my family. So if you're in pain, have something to eat. If you're sad, have something to eat. And it's always, and the more the merrier. And there's never a lack of food at the house. There's never a lack of appreciation. If it's a celebratory event, food has to be there. And the worst possible thing you could ever do is run out of food at a party.
Yes, people, speaking of food, I'm inviting you to listen to my other podcast, Food 101, our fourth season with Chef Alessandro, one of the best executive chefs in one of the five-star restaurants in downtown Toronto. Please do listen to our latest episode. We talk about focaccia, people. Focaccia, one of the trademark of Italian cuisine. So, Mr. Dog, what destination is at the top of your travel bucket list and why?
I'm sorry, you cut out for a second. What was that?
What will be your top of your travel bucket list?
Ooh, well, that depends on if we're talking about experiences or destinations. So if we're talking about destinations, Ethiopia and Sri Lanka are the top two on my bucket travel list. And if we're talking about experiences, I want to go skydiving. I should have gone skydiving when I was in New Zealand. My wife is incredibly against me going skydiving. But it's just, I don't know, there's something about it that both the fear and anticipation of it are the things that make me want to do it. I also really want to search for black mane wolves, which is an experience I heard about just from one guy. I volunteered at a reserve in South Africa, and the head, the guy who ran the volunteer program that I was working with, had gone for I think a month at one point to do research on the black mane wolf, and just hearing his experience. And this is really, I mean, this is really what gathers so much anticipation of travel in the first place, is that word of mouth. You hear from somebody and the amazing experience they had just makes you want to go more. Like, my parents went to Italy and all they could talk about was this or that. Now I just have to go to Italy. And so that's basically that, but searching for black mane wolves. And I'm like, I just want to do that. Let's do that.
Let's do that. Let's do your bucket list. So how did you stay safe and healthy while traveling?
Honestly, I think luck. let's be honest. There are some things that I've done, including that story about going to that bar in Thailand, that I should really have not been safe. But at the same time, it worked out. I think, it's not all contributed to luck, but at the same time, there is some hesitation and just knowing, trying to be aware culturally that I am not in my familiar space. Trying to be aware that things and people do act and intend differently. For example, I live in Los Angeles. Now, I grew up here, so I feel inherently safe here, but globally, it's one of the most dangerous cities in the world when you actually think about it. Mm-hmm. But I go to Bangkok and it can feel scary, because it feels, because it's different, but it's not necessarily actually dangerous or more dangerous than the city that I grew up and lived in. And so having that understanding is also appreciated, because I can kind of open myself a little more, and I'm not doing something stupid like asking somebody for drugs, because that is just a guaranteed ask for danger. If you're looking to do something illegal in a country that you are not familiar with, you're going to put yourself in danger that isn't necessary. So that's a few of the things that I avoided, right? Don't do something illegal. Try to pay attention to the laws. Like, I'm not going to chew gum in Singapore because it's against the law and I should know better.
Yes.
Just example.
Then speed to
yeah.
Advice you ever receive.
Be open. I mean, and it still holds true these days. I mean, I don't know if I'm different, or I don't know if traveling now is different than when my parents were doing it. Traveling, when I say different, I mean in terms of the mentality of travel, because the accessibility of travel is obviously different than when my parents were doing it, you know, 30 years ago or something. But staying open is so quintessential to having an incredible experience. If I didn't stay open, I would not have ended up in that treehouse in Cambodia. I would not have ended up at that bar in Thailand. I would not have ended up meeting these incredibly friendly people and having this really interesting conversation with a writer while in Jordan, because I was hitchhiking and just had this unique day. But if you're not open and you're only there to tick off a box of a highlight, then you're selling yourself short. And you're going to come back with an experience that's only half lived.
Yes, very well said, Mr. Dog. But before we go on, I'm inviting you to please do listen to my other podcast, Book 101 Review, on my fourth season too. And of course, please do grab a copy of your of my audiobook, because my Book 101 Review have a lot of 3 volumes of audiobook. Of course, my Volume 3, people, Book 101 Review, Volume 3 Suggestion is available on Audible. And of course, my climate change book, Earth Fever, and Book 101 Review, Volume 2 Selected, Book 101 Review, Volume 1 Highly Recommended, and of course, my self-help book, Threads of Existence, Weaving the Tapestry of Life. And of course, life is too short, a journey of discovery, fulfillment, and joy. Please do grab a copy or download on Audible. It's one of the bestsellers. And please do support all my audiobooks. So, Mr. Dog, let's talk about your latest or upcoming novel, Girl in the Ashes. How did you craft it?
Yeah, it was a great experience. I have to use my words carefully, because one time I said my wife inspired it, but it's a book about a serial killer. So it's not exactly the right wording if I say my wife inspired a novel about a serial killer. However, my wife helped me craft the idea is a better way of putting it. We were really into the show Dexter at the time. I'd never seen it. And it was one of her favorites. So she just came up with this idea. Oh, what if there was a Dexter type character, but living in Paris during World War II? And from that, this idea spun out. And this is one of the moments where my travel writing informs my fiction writing really well, because I've been to Paris multiple times. I love Paris. Who doesn't love Paris? It's kind of a cliche at this point. I would love to talk to somebody who doesn't love Paris and learn why. But with Girl in the Ashes, I was able to kind of marry my travel writing experience, my time in Paris, my fiction writing experience, as well as my love and interest in history, including World War II, to just dive right in head first to craft this interesting intersection of reality and surreality.
Yes, indeed. Interesting novel, Mr. Doug. So Girl in the Ashes. What behind the title of your second novel?
There is this instance in the book where the main character, Odette, and this is not a spoiler, you learn very quickly that she does this, but in order to hide the bodies of her victims, she throws them into a kiln and makes plates or pottery out of their bones. And so she, one, it gets rid of the ephemera, gets rid of the skin and the fat and all these things because the kiln's so hot. And then she'll take the bone dust, turn it into clay, and form the plates or the cups or the bowls or what have you. And I thought it was such an interesting image, the ash. And there's a scene, again, just quickly in the beginning, so it's not a spoiler, where she gets ash. It kind of, when you're ever working with dust, you know, chances are if you're pounding it or you're working with it in some way, the dust comes up and gets in your face. So I thought, oh, Girl in the Ashes, that's such a great title. And I think I was still also stuck on the trend of girl being in every title for books for a while. There was Girl on the Train, Girl, was it? Well, that's a good start, but you...
Yes. Do you think Girl in the Ashes will be the next Silence of the Lamb?
Oh, I would not be angry if it was. But the difference with Girl in the Ashes versus Silence of the Lambs, and this is one of the things that I just wasn't seeing a lot of and still have not seen a lot of. So please at me, anybody who has seen a book in a similar vein, let me know. But the big difference with this one is that you're following the serial killer. So instead of the cat and mouse game of the detective trying to track down the serial killer, you are the serial killer. You are following her. You are understanding why she does what she does from her perspective and witnessing the gore along the way.
Are you fine with Thomas Harris, Mr. Dog?
I'm sorry, say again.
Do you like the writing of Mr. Thomas Harris?
I'm not familiar with Thomas Harris. Does this make me a terrible person?
No, you're not.
This is why I'm a terrible writer, because if you give me a title, I can tell you whether I've read it or not, but you tell me an author and I might not know the author's name, yet I am an author trying to get people to know my name. Isn't that awful?
No, it's the same. Me too. I'm like that. Just like, oh, have you read this book? I said, I think so. I have it's hard for me to remember what I read to a lot of books that I read. So, Mr. Dog, Girl in the Ashes, what are your struggles in writing with?
One, the gore of the book, I tried not to shy away from. I didn't want to make it kind of torture porn is the term. I didn't want to do that, but I also didn't want to shy away from a lot of the necessary bloodshed that happened at that time, and to demonstrate certain things are real, certain tragedies are affecting. And if I make it too, I guess PG in a way, if I don't really center in on that gore for the audience to see, then I worry that they're going to glorify the action or the pain as opposed to be grotesque by it. And that's, I like to lean into those moments that demonstrate why and how something should be reviled or revered, as opposed to just trying to make it like a video game in that sense of glorifying the fight, glorifying the bloodshed, glorifying this thing that most people don't actually have experiences with, where if you had a truthful experience with it, you would understand why it should be avoided or why it's nasty. But it was hard to lean into those moments and give it, I think, the attention it deserved and needed. And then also the research. I love doing research, but research is a delicate balance, because you can reach that point where any more research and you're really just procrastinating, but at the same time, constantly telling myself, oh, but what if somebody calls me a fraud because I didn't have this one understanding of they used button down flies instead of zippers or something, which is not true in this case, but just as an example. Right? What if I overlooked that one small detail?
Yes. So, Mr. Dog, Girl in the Ashes, is this a series, quartet, or a trilogy?
Well, I don't want to spoil anything, but it has a resolution. However, if anybody wanted to expand upon this universe, it's something that I have toyed with already. In my initial idea, this was a loose trilogy where you wouldn't necessarily be following the same main character, but there would be characters who moved through each book that then you would follow in the next book. And I originally started out writing a completely different book about France in World War II that had to do with a massacre in southern France, until my wife kind of came up with that idea about a Dexter character in Paris, and then I shifted gears. However, there's a character in Girl in the Ashes that I know is in the other book, and that's when I thought, oh, okay, so maybe this could be connected in that way if that character makes their way back down into the other book. So there is a trilogy vaguely in mind, but different than just following the main character over and over again.
Okay, they are a standalone, in case they are trilogy. So looking forward for that, Mr. Dog, so that you can come by and promote your books to come. So Girl in the Ashes, which chapter do you enjoy the most writing?
There were three chapters that I enjoyed the most, and sadly I'm not going to be able to name the numbers, with the exception of chapter one. And chapter one has always been chapter one, which is rare for me. Usually I write modularly, so I'll write a chapter and then I'll have to figure out where to put it in the book. Where does it fit? Where does the timeline actually go? But chapter one has always been chapter one. It's always, in my opinion, been such a gripping introduction to Odette and the world in which she's living. It really came out very similar to what the final version of chapter one was in the published version, or the soon to be published version. So it showed me that I was on the right track, that from this one chapter, I was able to explode onto the page Odette and her experience. The other two chapters are, now again, I don't know the chapter numbers because some things had changed over time. However, within the book, you'll see one character, Aloysius, who is Odette's best friend / he kind of pines for her. And he's a coward. And that's, again, no, this isn't a spoiler. You see it on the page immediately. Everybody knows it. Everybody talks about it. And he has this desire to show up, this desire to show everybody that he's not a coward. But at the same time, that cowardice feeds resentment and anger in him. And there was a true event. So one of the things I love about historical fiction is being able to instill true events into this made up story. One of the true events was when it was a student protest in Paris against the Nazis, and there was a riot essentially where the gendarmes came in and cracked down on the protest. It wasn't the Nazis who did it. It was the French police who did it. And having Aloysius at that event, where he basically used it to demonstrate his power after for so long feeling like he didn't have any power because of his cowardice, but it also demonstrates that banality of evil, in terms of even the most unexpected people can carry a darkness inside them.
Yes, very well said, Mr. Dog. Girl in the Ashes, if you want to go back and revise the book itself, which part of the book you want to revise?
It would either be nothing or the whole thing. But the only reason it would be the whole thing is because I'd want to spend more time in there and put more in. But that's definitely not going to happen, nor do I want to do that. But this idea of, I loved being in this space, awkwardly spending time with a serial killer. But I loved being in this space, being in this world, and really understanding these characters to the point that I... And this is one of my favorite things about writing fiction, is I learn about a character so well that I can put them in a room and know what is going to happen with them in that room. What door are they going to go to? Or are they going to sit there and think? Or are they going to make food or whatever it is? Or are they going to call somebody and have a conversation about a thing? And being removed from that now. It's always the hardest thing is to finish a book and then move on to another project because I'm still pretty invested in the characters that I just left.
Yes, well said, Mr. Dog. So, Girl in the Ashes, what is the best highlight?
Oh, you're killing me. That's like asking me to pick my favorite child. What's the best highlight? Come now. I think it's really just the idea of being able to implement true pieces of history within a fictionalized event or a fictionalized piece. And the reason for me is that I think it creates an element people can connect to within the story. So if I just told people about that protest, that student protest in Paris, people might think, oh, that's interesting. But then here I am giving them a character and involving them in that moment. And all of a sudden it makes it, even though it's a fake account of a real event, suddenly makes it feel true.
Yes. Indeed. So Girl in the Ashes is good for a series, a motion picture, or another adaptation.
I am 100% ready for it to be onboarded as a limited series. It has all the things you want. Serial killers, emotional intrigue, World War II history. There are so many events that take place in this that will just be gorgeous on screen, but also have that emotional impact that people want from their visual entertainment.
Yes, people. So, Mr. Douglas, can you please invite our listeners or viewers to support your upcoming novel, Girl in the Ashes?
100%. Because when you support Girl in the Ashes, you're supporting an independent or at least small traditionally published author. And then you'll also find other authors that you can enjoy in the meantime. So please, you can find Girl in the Ashes for pre-order now, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, bookshop.org. You can also connect with me at douglasweissman.com and see even more awesome books out there in the world.
Yes, people, let's support Mr. Douglas Weissman, because if you support him, more books to come. So, Mr. Douglas, thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you for having me. I love our conversations. Yes, I said conversations. This isn't the only one, people. You can go find others.
Okay, Morticon people, see you soon.